Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy who will grant you a mulligan, but then remind you about it the whole ride home. Ask me how I know. Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Off vacation and once again, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. And well, we're heading into the home stretch of the PGA Tour season. We're a week away from the final major, the PGA Championship at Belrive in St. Louis. And this week, is the final WGC Bridgestone Invitational at legendary Firestone South in Akron. Next year, this WGC event moves up in the summer and moves to Memphis. PGA Tour has been coming to this venue for regular tour events and major championships since the mid-50s, and I'm really going to miss watching golf there. And with eight wins, so is Tiger Woods. We'll talk Tiger, the WGC, the Open Championship, and more with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and Ron Mintz, the golf analyst of Fansided.com. Also, the USGA's Mid-Amateur Championship is coming to Charlotte Country Club in a few weeks, and one of the participants, past champion and Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey, will spend some time with us. But we begin today with Ron Green Jr. Ron, we haven't talked since your trip over to Scotland for the Open Championship, so before we get to what actually went down at the Open Championship, I'm more concerned about how you passed the time the week leading up to, meaning where did you play, how much fun did you have, and how was your golf game?
Well, I managed to squeeze in 11 nights in St. Andrews, which is never a bad thing.
Nice.
So it was about a 30-mile commute over to Carnoustie, so I got there a little early. And I'm almost ashamed to talk about where I played. I did not play during the championship, but the weekend before, I managed to play the old course, and Kings Barnes. That was a pretty good threesome. Two times on the old course and Kings Barnes with Pete Bavakwa, who was then the CEO of the PGA, and showed his poker face by never letting us know that he was about to become president of NBC Sports.
Was that a big surprise?
Yes. It's a good move for him. I mean, that's a big job. I mean, CEO of PGA is a big job, too. But I think overseeing NBC Sports, such as he's going to be doing, is a very big thing for him. Good for him.
What was his dealing with NBC? Was that with the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup? Because I was trying to figure out the connection there. Obviously, the PGA Championship has been a property of CBS Sports, so that would have made more sense to me. But is it the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup where he deals with NBC? Is that where he got their attention?
Well, the President's Cup is a PGA Tour event, so, but the Ryder Cup certainly. And he had been with the USGA back in the day, too, when NBC had U.S. Open and all that. So I think just through the years, and I think it's one of those things. I don't think anybody knew there was a position there to be had, and then all of a sudden you find out he's going to be doing it. I think it's good for golf. I mean, my sense is he will have a direct hand in what the Golf Channel does, and it's down the road a little bit, but there will be television negotiations coming up in a few years with Discovery coming in on the international side. It'll be interesting to see how everything plays out. And so I think, it's suddenly now I can say I know the president of NBC Sports.
Had you played the old course before, or was this your first time?
I had played it one time 10 or so years ago. I'd been around it maybe three opens. It's so cool. And I mean, I literally, first night I was here, stayed in Rusak's hotel right on the 18th hole, about midway up. I mean, I could look right out on the golf course there and see it. And, if you've ever been, you know how cozy the town is to the golf course. I mean, it's hard to describe how close it is. I mean, literally, like stepping across the sidewalk and you're on the golf course. And so it was just a great thrill. I was fortunate. I was supposed to play once, and something opened up. We got to play twice. The guy who works with us over there for Global Golf Post is a member of the RNA. He and his dad both, and so they hosted us a couple times. Went in and had lunch one day with our coats and ties on, and you go in there and eat your Dover sole and your salad, and maybe have you a Chardonnay with lunch, and then go out there and try to play golf afterwards. But it was just tremendous, and it gives you weather could hardly have been better. Not a whole lot of wind. In fact, I wore shorts at King's Barnes, but you could have worn shorts every day. And just to walk around that golf course and hit those shots. And the more you get to play it, the more I came to appreciate it. And just especially the last six or so holes coming in, you're playing back toward the town, and you just see it. And you got, I mean, that 13th hole, you got this bluff out there you go over, and, you know, playing down by the edge of the property, and then you turn toward home, and then you stand there and try to hit it over that big old course hotel sign a couple times, and I managed to pull it left of the sign, both left of the wall both times, which leaves you about 200 yards in. That is not the desired path, but it's just so cool. And you play up 18, and, you know, no matter how late in the day it is, there's people wandering in the streets and standing behind the green and watching you. Somebody hits a good shot, you get a little applause. It's tremendous. And then King's Barnes, it's for something so new to become sort of a classic. I mean, it's just so much fun to play, and Americans particularly seem to love it. And we had a great day out there, and I had my good moments, and, you know, I had the occasional, I didn't have any real bouts with Gorse or anything, but, played about the way I would expect to play, so I came away satisfied.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk a little bit about the Open Championship. More surprising that Tiger got in the lead so fast on Sunday, starting four back, or that when it came time for Tiger to close the deal, it seemed he'd forgotten how to close the deal?
I think it's more surprising that he got there as quickly as he did, because so many guys were going backward and the wind was blowing. And, you know, there were several guys. I remember asking him on Saturday afternoon, he was finished before the rest of the guy leaders. And I said, are you going to worry more about how many people are in front of you or how many strokes behind? And he said, mostly how many people. And he had five or six guys there in front of him. So there was sort of a full retreat at some point during the day, although Molinari just kept parring the golf course to death there until he made a couple birdies. So I think I was surprised, you know, you look up and actually some of us took pictures of the big electronic scoreboard in the media center when Tiger had the lead on the back nine of a major on Sunday. Like, weren't quite sure we'd ever see that again. And then, you know, I think, you know, he hit it, I mean, it was hard out there with that wind blowing, and he hit a couple shots and caught some bad spots there. And, you know, maybe got a little impatient, tried to do too much when he tried to hit the flop shot on 11 instead of trying to just pitch the ball over there, get it 15 feet from holding himself a putt for par. I think he would probably like to have that play over. But, I mean, it was hard coming in. You know, it would have been great had he closed it out. But I just think to have been there Saturday afternoon and Sunday when he's in contention there, there was an electricity that, you know, it's different when he's there. And he didn't get it done, and everybody wants to say, well, does that mean he's forgotten how to win? Well, I think he's a different Tiger. Rory said so afterwards. He goes, I don't think we're playing against the guy that Ernie and Davis and VJ and those guys played against. I mean, he's going to be there a lot. But he got there, and he hasn't quite, you know, you can look at what happened at Bay Hill. You can look at sort of this poor close at the Players' Championship and think, is this a trend or a pattern? I think he would look at it that way, too. He's just, it's the last step in this process.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you almost got the sense of you had forgotten what that electricity was like with him on Sunday at a lead, on top of a leaderboard at a major championship. And there, everyone always talked about it had a different feel. And it's been a real long time. And I was wondering if there was a palpable excitement in the media center.
Oh, I mean, just look at how many people were walking the golf course and out there and everywhere. Yeah, I mean, there was a buzz. I mean, everybody sort of knew and was watching and sort of thinking, playing the what-if game. You know, is this the time? Is he going to finally get one and get one in a big one? You know, it's different. But I think, you know, there were so many stories going on at the end of that tournament. I think everybody was a little surprised how Jordan Spieth came unraveled there, didn't quite get it done there. You know, Molinari was the guy from throughout the week, just given what he had done leading into it over the last two or three months, from winning at Wentworth and then winning Tiger's event. And you just knew he had the sense he was going to be there. Somebody's going to have to beat him. And, you know, I mean, they get to the last, whatever, seven holes or something. Molinari plays them two under, Tiger plays them two over, and there's the difference.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. A couple more things about Tiger. If the vote is taken today, is the comeback player of the year Tiger Woods or Bubba Watson?
Tiger Woods.
Really? I mean, with three wins from Bubba?
Well, I just think we didn't think Tiger. I think Tiger has probably exceeded our expectations. Sure, Bubba's had a good year. I think some of Bubba's comeback was self-created or whatever. Mm. And I think Tiger would get that vote, just like I think Tiger's going to be on the Ryder Cup team. I think it's I can't, other than injury, can't foresee a scenario where he wouldn't be a playing member of the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, even if he doesn't make it on points, and I'm not sure where he stands right now, if you're the captain, there's no way you don't take a flyer on Tiger Woods, right?
Yeah, you're Jim Furyk and got him in there as your vice captain and saying, all right, so I want to put Brian Harman out there with somebody this afternoon instead of you. You know, I just don't see something against Brian Harman, who's a tough guy and yeah. I think would be good in Ryder Cup, but I just think if you can put Tiger Woods out there, and I think, you know, after the PGA, eight guys are going to be automatically qualified, and Furyk's going to have four picks, but I think, at least in my mind, he has two picks, because I got to believe Tiger and Phil are going to be take up two of the picks, so then it's going to come down to whether Webb makes it eight automatically, or DeChambeau, who sort of had a meltdown over there and on the European Tour last weekend, is it going to be... Yeah, I mean, Zach Johnson's a tough guy. I mean, Kuchar, you got to believe, has a really good shot. You know, if Kisner plays a good PGA, maybe he's in there. So it's still some, you know, the next couple of weeks go a long way toward determining what Jim Furyk's going to have to decide.
Ron, Tiger's at Firestone this week with his performance at the Open Championship. He moved inside the top 50 in the world, which got him there. The last hurrah for the WGC at Akron's Firestone South Course, an historic PGA Tour venue for, God, 50 years, it seems like. He's won there. The number may be, I think, eight or nine times. I don't know. It's something ungodly at Firestone. Because of what he did at the Open, are our expectations raised for not just Firestone, but for Belle Reve? And is that really good and practical?
I think they're raised for Firestone. I think because it's a smaller field, and given his track record, that's where he won his last tournament. He knows how to play it. He has made it. You know, he's never been one to go to divulge much about goals or whatever, but earlier this year he said, I want to get there and play Akron one more time. So that one means something to him. Now, that doesn't guarantee he's going to go out there and play well, but I think if you're going to give me three or four picks at Firestone, Tiger's name's going to be one of them. I think when we get to Phil Reeve, it's, yeah, depending on how he does at Firestone, sure, but I think you're going to gather the usual suspects with, you know, Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas and Justin Rose and guys like that at Belle Reve, and you know, Rory too, I think. You know, Rory quietly puts together some pretty good finishes in major championships. He's not win them, but he's had, you know, other than the occasional, I guess, Shinnecock was a blip, but otherwise, he's building a pretty good resume of top five finishes.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. A couple of sad notes in the world of golf this week. Let's start with someone who I had met on a number of occasions, and I really, really liked this guy. He was one of the good ones. We lost Bruce Litsky this week.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, all you got to do is read the sort of responses in the wake of the news there about just, I mean, the effusive praise and admiration and respect people had for Bruce Litsky, who was just, more than anything, just a nice person who treated everybody well. No sense that he was a big-time star. You know, he was never a big, flashy-type star, but he was – the people in the game knew how good he was. I mean, really, really good. You don't win that many times without being as good as he was. And just, I mean, had that gift to know that he could walk up there and hit that little cut shot whenever he wanted to and every time he needed to and, you know, eliminate half the golf course, and just gave you what I could only imagine is – so much peace of mind standing over the ball, knowing where you already know where it's going to go. And, you know, the famous story about him not practicing and his caddy stuffing the banana under the head cover. And sure enough, 2 months later when they show up, he pulls the clubs out of the bag and the banana's still in the head cover. So he just had a way about him and a way to play. And he was one of the really good ones.
Yeah, I remember the first time that I met Bruce Litsky was at a senior tour event. And I watched him warm up on the range, and I'd always heard, you know, they always refer to it as, yes, that consistent fade. This is the only guy I ever know who I would seriously say is a professional, won and was effective playing a slice. There were certain golf courses that Bruce Litsky could not play because he started it out to the left and he knew where it was coming back, but it was an unbelievable shot for a pro to play. But you're right, every single time he was able to do it. And another sad note this week, I don't know what to say about somebody like Jared Lyle, 36 years old, and the pictures being posted of him going into palliative care with his wife and his two daughters. It's a really, really sad story. And I think we forget what a closed fraternity and what a tight fraternity the world of professional golf and those that cover it is, because I have seen so many golfers come out today. People, you'd go, well, I wouldn't have thought that he would know Jared Lyle, but all these guys know each other, and it just affects them so big.
Yeah, I mean, I had the privilege 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, of presenting, I guess it's our Hogan Award at the Golf Writers Association dinner at Augusta, to Jared Lyle, honoring players who've overcome big physical challenges. And obviously he had overcome a huge one there. And I didn't really know him, but I spent some time with him, chatted with him, and introduced him and listened to him talk. And I mean, it was an emotional speech he gave, you know. I mean, he was bubbly, a part of it. I mean, you know, got somber at times, and you understood then the fight was ongoing. And so, you know, you would see the occasional updates, and then when you get sort of the news this week that basically we fought the good fight, and now we just gotta, you know, let nature take its course. I mean, he's a guy who a lot of people have kept their eye on for a long time. They've worn ribbons and done things to raise awareness for him, and it's just nothing but a sad thing.
One last thing, Ron, get you out of here on this. You took time off of your vacation week to tweet out about the restriction of green reading books. This has been a huge controversy on the PGA Tour for the last 2 years. I am in total step with you on this. Reading the green is part of the game. And what exact steps have they taken? What are the restrictions?
Well, I think there's a six-week period where they're going to take listen to conversation about the proposed rule changes, which means basically they already know what they're going to do. But I think you can still have greens books, but as I understand it, they can't show any less than 4% slope. They can't break it down into these minuscule little things now. I mean, 4% slope means you can't put a pin there anyway. So basically, you know, you can have a diagram of what the green looks like, but all this sort of lasered, you know, minutia that, I mean, I look at it and I mean, it just makes my eyes blurry seeing all those arrows pointing all sorts of ways. You almost get seasick. But, you know, I mean, guys have to go back and do it. I go back to something, I think it was this year earlier or whenever, that Ian Poulter, maybe last year, tweeted, just said, you know, you should have to do something for yourself. I mean, they've got the yardages narrowed down. They've got, you know, their equipment dialed into such ridiculous specifications, and they know everything, ball flight, launch angle, spin rates, all that stuff. I mean, the simple act of reading a green, and, you know, if you stand over it and you and I look at it like, I'm not sure if it's going left or right, well, they can sort of stand over it and say, well, I know it's going right because, look, the book's showing me this. I think, you know, you read greens with your eyes, you read greens with your feet, and I just think it was a part of the game that they could bring back. And you know, it just sort of blossomed in the last couple of years, I think. And does it slow down play? Probably. I mean, you know, guys read the putts and they stand up and pull those books out and look at it again to sort of reinforce what they're feeling. So I like the move. I think, you know, it might be, you know, a brief little flare up. Some guys saying, you know, they're trying to take this away or that away. No, just, I mean, Hogan didn't use them. Nicklaus didn't use them. Trevino didn't use them there. I'm being an old guy. But, you know, go read the greens and figure it out for yourself.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's our friend Ron Green Jr. And up next, in anticipation of the USGA's Mid-Amateur Championship coming to Charlotte Country Club in a couple of weeks, participant, Carolina amateur golfing legend and past champion Scott Harvey takes Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Scott Harvey is a Carolina amateur golfing legend and a past champion of the USGA's mid-amateur title that's coming to Charlotte Country Club here in a couple of weeks. Scott, you're coming off a T6 at the Porter Cup. Now, I just found out about this event a couple of years ago, and it fascinates me. This is a really elite amateur event, invitation only, 72 holes. I've got a list of some past champions here. David Duval, Scott Verplank, Phil Mickelson, Brian Harmon, some guy named Bill Harvey. I know it's held in upstate New York, but that's about it. Sort of describe this tournament for me and some of the venues that it's played on.
Yeah, it's actually played on the same course every year, Niagara Falls Country Club, and it's a huge amateur event. And like you said, it attracts all the best players, and you know, the list of champions is a who's who of such. So, yeah, matter of fact, some of the names you mentioned, I grew up going out there and caddying for my dad as a kid when he played, and I watched a lot of those guys win, and a lot of good memories from that. But, yeah, it's a great tournament, great course. Everything about it's just so much fun.
Yeah, I was reading about the history of it earlier, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just so cool. Hey, I know it's been a quieter season for you this year. Mrs. Harvey has you nesting again. Congratulations, by the way. But you've got a couple of really great events coming up at super venues. First, I want to talk about the U.S. Amateur coming up at Pebble Beach. Always great to play Pebble, but Pebble in competition, how cool is that?
You know, bucket list for me. I've never been. That's like, as a golfer, the one place for everybody. I guess you just have to go. It's one place I've always wanted to go. I just haven't done it. And, you know, we're doing a whole family, making a whole family trip out of it, staying 10 days no matter what, and just kind of enjoy ourselves. And you know, to be able to play in a national competition out there on the one of the most famous courses in the world, I mean, that's, like I said, bucket list item for Scott.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize you hadn't played out there. That's got to be the coolest feeling, I would think, to be in competition and actually stand on that 18th hole and just sort of pinch yourself and go, wow, I'm really doing this. This is Pebble Beach.
Yeah, it's going to be surreal. I mean, we're actually going out a day early to play Cyprus with a few of the other mid-ams that are playing in the event as well.
Oh, now that's the one. That's the one for a whole bunch. See, now I wasn't jealous before because, like, I could take out a second mortgage and get on Pebble, but now I'm jealous about Cypress Point. And then you've got the Mid-Am coming up here at Charlotte. I mean, back-to-back, two really great tracks, and I know you've played Charlotte before, but you were in town last week for the media event for the Mid-Am. I think Charlotte Country Club is a gem. Not a whole lot of people know about it because it's one of these uber private facilities. But in terms of courses in the Carolinas, you've played them all. It's got to be near the top, yes?
It's my favorite. I love it. I you know, and I think the Carolinas Amateur was there about 2011 or 12, somewhere in there. And up until that point, I had not played that course. Never even heard of it, honestly. And like you said, super private and exclusive and that sort of thing. And then my first time I walked on that course, I remember the feeling. I was like, well, this is one of my favorite courses I've ever played immediately. I mean, it was incredible. And I played it last week for that media day preview for the Mid-Am. And nothing's changed. I mean, it's phenomenal from start to finish. And that doesn't discount the clubhouse and the practice facilities and everything. First class all the way.
Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey is our guest taking Dead Aim. Is there a home field advantage? I mean, not necessarily in terms of the course itself, but a lot of guys aren't used to playing, and I didn't realize this until I went home to Texas last week, but I've gotten so used to playing elevation changes and odd lies that you get here in the Carolinas that you don't get a lot of places in the country. If you get in a match play situation, you might see some guys getting a little tighter and having to think a little more than you'll have to, perhaps, right?
I would say being a little bit more comfortable with things that you just described, you know, with uneven lies and uphills and downhills, you know, maybe a slight edge, but I wouldn't call it anything significant. I would probably say the most significant thing would be financially not having to buy plane tickets and things like that.
Yeah, it's very rare that, I mean, you're blowing it out at Pebble, but very rare that you get to play a competition, and theoretically, you could go home and sleep in your own bed every night if you wanted to.
That is correct.
You know, Scott, you've played in the U.S. Open. You've played in the AM. You've won the Mid-AM. Mm-hmm. Why is it, in your opinion, that the USGA gets in trouble with course setup, obsessing over par, in my opinion, at the U.S. Open. But I never hear gripe number one about the setup at the AM or the setup at the Mid-AM. I dang sure didn't hear any griping about the setup at L.A. North for the Walker Cup last year. Why do you think that is?
I think they tried anything and everything to try to make even par or one over the winning score. And at some point, you cross a line between hard and goofy. And that's my take on it. I think they go a little too far sometimes with focusing on that. There's nothing wrong with 8-under or 10-under or 6-under winning tournament. Just don't push it too far. And that's my take on it. But at the amateurs I can tell you a couple of times where it has gotten a little out of control.
Really?
Chambers Bay and, oh, yeah, Chambers Bay. Well, I think 2010 or something like that.
Yeah. So they've blown it at Chambers Bay twice.
Yes, but the first, they were different, though. But they were different. The first time, they just let it get way too dry. And then in Chambers Bay last time, it was just conditioning. The greens, when the AM was there, they weren't near as bad as when the U.S. Open was there, as far as the crabgrass or poen or whatever it was in the greens.
Yeah, no, I don't even think there was grass. I think it was what we like to refer to as down at Myrtle Beach right now as painted dirt is what was going on at Chambers Bay. Hey, Scott, speaking of international competition, I've been meaning to ask you this. Am I crazy, or did the Palmer Cup that took place a few weeks ago, did they change its format this time around? I don't remember it being a co-ed event and being that large, or has it been that way?
You know, I didn't know it was a co-ed event either. I thought they just had a men's and a women's. I didn't know they were playing together. Is that what happened?
Yeah, they had them playing together and actually had team competition, co-ed team competition, as a featured event, I think, on a couple of days.
Yeah, I had no idea. I'd not heard of that. I think that's actually a good idea from a standpoint of, essentially you can have two events in one and get more people, spectators, and everything, all more involved. I think there's a lot of good things that come from that. But
I think so, too. I think, I tease the USGA and harp on them because, they have this grow the game slogan, and then they do everything possible not to grow the game. But you get the best amateur golfers, men and women, together and show that camaraderie and that respect. I think that does nothing but good things for the game.
Yeah, they've got opportunities to do more like things like that, and I hope they take advantage of them. Augusta doing the women's, I forget exactly what term it is, but they're doing the final round at Augusta National on the women's, some sort of women's amateur event. That's a start for women's golf's getting bigger, and there's a lot of room for that demographic to grow for sure.
All they need to do is look at what happened to drive, chip, and putt. That was a dead competition until Augusta National put their name behind it. And now every kid who swings a club between the age of 6 and 15 is dying to get to Augusta National to compete in drive, chip, and putt. So if they put their weight and their cachet behind a women's amateur event, I mean, who knows what could happen?
Yeah, that's true. And I'll tell you, being out there and being a part of that drive, chip, and putt thing, you can just see everyone's face glowing and just what a special thing that is. And like you said, how far that's come from, before it was associated with Augusta to now is absolutely incredible.
Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey, our guest taking Dead Aim. He'll be competing in the Mid-Am in Charlotte here in just a few weeks. The Palmer Cup was played overseas. Your last Walker Cup, you played overseas. How did you like Lynx golf?
Oh, I love it. It's fun. It's something different. And you play these Lynx style courses here, but it's not the same. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's just more fun because I guess you don't do it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a different style, and you can play all kinds of shots on the ground that you can't necessarily play over here. The wind's blowing 200 miles an hour in every direction, and it's just fun. I mean, and it's exactly what you see on TV. You get in the bunker, you got to kind of just flop it out, take your one shot penalty essentially, and you miss a green. You might putt it from 50 yards off a green somewhere. I mean, it's just a lot of different options and you're presented with things you're just not presented with here. So it's a lot of fun.
You know, something I hadn't thought about until I heard one of the pros mentioning it at Carnoustie a week ago, and that is getting used to the way the ball comes off the turf over there, that it's completely different. How long did it take for you to get used to that feeling?
You know, that's true. It's a lot firmer ground and tighter. It just, because of that, as a result of being firmer, it just feels tighter, I guess is the best way to put it. So it's more of just getting used to it as far as more than it is doing anything different, if that makes any sense. You don't necessarily have to change anything. You just have to develop a little bit of a comfort with it.
Compared to when you were first coming along, you were, you know, a young high school player, college golfer, playing amateur golf. The amateur scene in this country right now, would you describe it as better than then, worse than then, or about the same?
As it regards to the skill of golfers?
The quality and depth of the amateur golf now compared to when you were first coming along.
Oh, yeah. It's way better. I mean, Tiger changed all that, right? So, I mean, he's 2 years older than me, I believe. And so, essentially the same group. And you know, when I was coming up, you didn't work out. Like, if you were in a play golf, the gym was like evil. You stayed away from weights and all that stuff. And well, Tiger changed all that. Now, not only that, but you know, now you got kids getting formal golf lessons when they're 6 years old and 5 years old and that sort of thing. And I got a kid, one of my son's friends, who's 8 years old and he's got a golf seminar in the garage. I mean, you don't see that back in my when I was a kid. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just so much deeper now. The game has grown so much. There's more money in the game. You can go more places in life with it as far as schools and colleges and that sort of thing. It's much, much deeper now.
Yeah, just off the top of my head, the last couple of years, I mean, in the mid-am category, there's you, there's Hagestad, there's Parziali. I know that Gim and Doc and Neiman have turned pro, but Braden Thornberry's still there. I mean, it just seemed like over the last couple of years, I've been watching amateur golf going, God dang, these guys are good. And not just amateur good, they're good for anybody in the world right now.
That's what, you know, that's kind of, I call it the Tiger effect. I mean, you know, I played with 15-year-olds out there shooting the low 60s in tournaments, and it's, you know, they look like tour players. I mean, their swing, their attitude, everything about them is just the distance they're hitting the ball. You know, when I was 15, it's like you break par, and then, you know, that's great and everything, but I wasn't considering shooting 64 and 63 and hitting the ball 295 yards. That just didn't happen back then.
Well, in all fairness, you and I still remember Persimmon Woods and wound Bellotta balls. I mean, let's be honest. Oh,
the driver
good.
Head was smaller than a hybrid head.
I thought about that the other day when I looked at my office. I looked at an old Hogan 5-wood that I had, and I said, God, that's like half my hybrid. How did
that's
I hit
right.
that
it's
thing?
True. It's true. I remember, I'll tell you what, Charlie, I remember when the first Great Big Bertha came out, and that was like the first big driver, which
yeah.
is now the size of like a 5-wood.
Yes.
But anyway, I remember that thing, and I remember telling my dad, I said, Dad, there's no way, and you know what, I will ever hit a driver that big. I mean, and now I got, you know, 3 woods that are all bigger than that.
I was going to say, how's that 460cc looking at the end of your shaft right now? Get you out of here on this. Scott Harvey, Carolina amateur golfing legend, will be competing here in a couple of weeks at the Mid-Am at Charlotte. You know, I feel like you've done so much in golf, and I think you're an amazing ambassador for the game. What goals do you have left? What would you still like to do if you had to give me one or two things that you'd still love to do in the game of golf?
You know, as far as something that I haven't done yet.
Well, just whatever. What do you have on your list of, I need to accomplish this?
You know, I had some goals for as far as winning another mid-amateur and getting back to Augusta. And, you know, priorities change. So I got a couple years now with my baby coming. It's going to be a boy, so we're having another boy. So when my son gets here, I'm going to have a couple years of focusing more on life at home and less about me playing golf. So, but when I start to come back from that, I think I'm just going to focus on that. Just pretty much the mid-am is the ultimate goal, and and winning that and getting back to Augusta, which was one of the most special things I've ever done in my life. But as far as something I haven't done, I wouldn't mind going over and playing in the British Amateur. I think that would be really neat. And I've been exempt for it for years, but it's just so expensive. Good gracious.
Yeah, it's hard to justify that expense. I was going to ask if you'd ever tried to qualify for the Open Championship, but that's even a bigger gamble.
Yeah. You spend $8,000 to go over there and shoot 82 on a rainy, windy day. That's not good.
Well, brother, best of luck to you at the Mid-Am, and I'll make sure to come out and see you.
Please do, Charlie. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, buddy.
You won't find a better man in golf than that one. Former mid-amateur champ and Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey. And when we return, the Open, Tiger, the WGC, and more with Fansided.com's golf analyst Ron Mintz, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors, and now joined by the golf analyst at Fansided.com, Ron Mintz. Ron, let's start talking. It's been a while since we've spoken. Let's talk about the Open Championship a little bit. What surprised you more on that final Sunday? How fast Tiger got into the lead, or how fast everyone seemed to fold like a cheap suit on that front nine?
I think Tiger had surprised everybody. I mean, he's done real well since he came back. He's already made it to number 50 in the world, and he's playing in the WGC this week, which, you know, that's how he got in. So it's amazing that he came from, 900-something to 50 this quick. But, yeah, he surprised me, and I thought there for a while that he was going to win. It would not have surprised me at all Sunday when he was making those birdies, but then he sort of fell back there at the end. And, of course, Molinari was, you know, a lot of guys were chasing him, Justin Rose and of course, Tiger. But when they'd make a birdie, Molinari would match it. So they just couldn't catch him.
Yeah, Molinari was just an iceman. You know, the one thing about Tiger's round, I just keep going back to that 11th hole. And he got a great break when he hit it into the gallery. He got the Arnold Palmer kick off the fan to a not horrible lie, but it was one of those just juicy lies, the ball sitting up. And he had the option of, okay, I can put this on the green to 20 feet, and the worst I'm going to get is bogey, or I can go for the hero shot. And he's in the lead at this point by himself. And he makes the mental mistake that Tiger Woods, the old Tiger Woods, never would have made. The old Tiger would have put it in the center of the green and said, I'm going to take what I'm going to take. But he goes for the hero shot, brings double bogey into play, takes double bogey, and you just felt the collective wind go out of the sails. I think that may have surprised me even more than him getting in the lead was once he got there that he forgot how to close.
Exactly. And that's one thing I think that, the only reason he hasn't won yet, he just needs more reps. He needs more tournaments. Every week he seems, his score may not get better every week, but he, to me, does things that remind me of the old Tiger every week that he hadn't been doing. And I'm very impressed by his course management. You know, Tiger used to think, well, there wasn't anywhere he would be that he wouldn't try to get out of. Now he is, he's aiming for the fairway, and he doesn't mind keeping driver in the bag. He's playing very conservative, but it's paying off for him. And he's even said that. He finally realized you don't have to be in the lead on Thursday. You need to be in the lead on Sunday, and that's the way he's approaching the game.
Ron Mintz is the golf analyst with Fansided.com. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. I mentioned players folding like a cheap suit. Let's start with the guy who was at the top of the leaderboard looking to defend his Open Championship title. You know, it seems like, in fact, you and I may have had this conversation not long ago, that every golf season we seem to go through this stretch where we say, what in the hell is wrong with Jordan Spieth? And then all of a sudden, he turns it around and he wins a major or he really contends. I really thought that he was going to go ahead and just finish things off and defend his title at the Open Championship, and all of us would go, okay, well, this is just what Jordan Spieth does. He spends half the year in purgatory, and then he figures it all out. But he's still a little boy lost out there at times.
He really is this year. He hasn't had a win. His best finish was third at the Masters. He missed the cut at the U.S. Open, tied for ninth at the Open Championship. And if you look at the tournaments that he has made the cuts, and by the way, he's missed five cuts out of 18 starts. He's only made 13.
That's a big number for a player like that.
Oh, yeah. He's got five top tens, but if you look at statistics, this pretty well tells the whole story. He still is ranked 14th in tee to green, which is very respectable. And 14th, you know, he can win tournaments that way. But putting, strokes gained putting, 177th in the world. I mean, that tells the story right there. He's getting to the green, but he can't make the putts. And I'm talking about, you can see him standing over 3 footers, and he's petrified. So I don't know if it's mental. I wouldn't say he has the yips, but that's where his problems lie. And I don't know if we set the bar too high for him. 2015, wins two majors in a row, the Masters and the U.S. Open. And
dang near wins the third.
Yeah. Coming out of nowhere at the Open, yeah, that was just amazing. So who knows what's going on in his head. He never gives up, though. If you look at the tournaments, and this is another one of his key statistics that stands out, he'll have a good round, then second, third round, he'll blow up. But he always comes back in the final round. The Houston Open this year, he was out of it. He came back in the final round, shot a 66, ended up finishing third. The Masters, shot 74-71, comes back in the final round and almost could have won it if he'd have made a couple putts on 17-18 and shot a 64, finished third. And he always comes back in that final round, but it's too little too late. Despite all the problems, he's not giving up, and he keeps saying every week, I'm getting closer, but the numbers don't show that.
Ron, last week, the Canadian Open, to me, this guy's one of the biggest enigmas in golf. Every time that I think that Dustin Johnson is completely unbeatable and I can't see anybody even getting close to him, you know, he's not a factor at Carnoustie at all. Missed the cut by a mile on Friday, but then comes back at Glen Abbey last week and plays spectacularly. It looks amazing. And you look at his resume now, I think it's up to 19 tour wins. He's got a major. He's got WGCs on the resume. I mean, he's definitely getting in and going into the Hall of Fame. He's a stone cold lead pipe lock, but I'm wondering, how good is he really?
He's definitely the best wedge player in golf, the best driver in golf. In between is where he's not as good as others because he doesn't use the clubs. I mean, he really is a driver wedge player, and I think that's what happened at the Open. He decided not to leave driver in the bag. Everybody else, you know, they weren't hitting driver because with all his bunkers, it was like threading a needle. If you got there, which he could get there and drive the par fours, but how could you go between 20 pot bunkers that were everywhere? It was like a minefield. But he just refused to leave that driver in the bag, and that's what cost him. Other guys, like Tiger was hitting irons off the tee and playing very conservatively, or not conservatively, but the way they should. So he just loves to hit that driver, and that cost him at the Open Championship. But you're right. I think DJ's become sort of like Tiger was. There's certain courses he loves, and if it doesn't fit his eye, he's not going to play well. I was shocked he shot what he did yesterday at Firestone.
Ron Mintz is the golf analyst at fansided.com, our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk about Firestone. This is the final WGC Bridgestone at Firestone South, one of the venerable courses on the PGA Tour. I think they've been coming there every year since the mid-50s. Major championships have been held there, and it disappears from the PGA Tour schedule starting next year. This has always been one of my favorite courses on tour to watch an event, because you can say what you want about technology and the ball, but usually right around single digits to low double digits under par wins this thing, because this golf course is great, and I hate to see it go.
I do too. I mean, I think we all, or at least some of us baby boomers, remember the World Series of Golf, or if that's correct.
Yeah, no, that's what I was telling my son about this, that I remember before the WGC events, for many years, this was the World Series of Golf, and this was one of the most prestigious non-majors on tour, because this was back at a time when you won a major, you got a 10-year exemption. And if you won the World Series of Golf, you got a 10-year exemption on the PGA Tour. It was a big deal.
Firestone, I mean, that name is synonymous with golf. It's just, it's like an institution going away. And it, you know, I don't know why they made the decision to move to Memphis, but it's sad to see it go. It really is. Maybe something else will come back. But they've never really changed the course. They've never tricked it up. It's just a hard, solid golf course. And Tiger probably hates to see it go more than anybody. He dominated there since he's been in golf. I mean, winning 8 times. If he wins this week, it'll be a PGA Tour record with 9 wins at the same tournament. Nobody's ever done that.
As we record this conversation, they are in the middle of round two at Firestone. Tiger was 4-under 66 in the first round. Every time that he has shot 3-under or better in the first round in this tournament, he's gone on to win. My question to you is this. If Tiger Woods does win this week at Firestone, how does that change the landscape psychologically heading into next week at the PGA Championship at Belrive?
Oh, I think it'd be huge. I'm not that familiar with the course yet. I haven't really studied it. But, yeah, I mean, Tiger, I think he wants to play his way into the Ryder Cup, which if – he would have to win the PGA to do that. Winning this week would not be enough points to be on the Ryder Cup team. I don't think he wants to be a captain's pick, but he will be. I think the consensus is he and Phil both will be.
Oh, well, if you've got an option, but I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Kevin Kisner. I do. He's a bulldog. But if my options as Captain Furyk are I can be a captain's pick with Kevin Kisner or I can be a captain's pick with 14-time major champion Tiger Woods, who are you picking?
Yeah, exactly. And so he has to win a major to make the team. Plus, I remember in 2015, he came to Greensboro, never played there in over 20 years on tour, trying to earn his way into the
playoffs,
FedEx playoffs, and didn't make it, even though he finished 10th. And so he wants to, he's in there, but he wants to get higher up in the rankings. So he's got two big motivators there going into the PGA.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Mintz is the golf analyst with fansided.com, our guest taking Dead Aim. This week, we have a couple of sad stories on the PGA Tour. First, I want to talk about a guy who I met a couple of times and thought he was absolutely delightful. I don't know if you ever got to meet him, but I know you got to watch him play golf. We lost one of the good ones with Bruce Litsky last week.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, I did meet Bruce, and of course, he's had this battle for a few months. The cancer he had, the brain cancer, was, from what I understand, the most aggressive type there is, and he put up a great fight. I followed his wife. She set up a page that friends could follow on Facebook, and so I've been keeping up with him. And he was doing fairly well, but all of a sudden it got the best of him. But I was looking through some pictures I'd taken back in the 80s when I was at the Masters. I think it was 89, and I saw a picture of him and Ben Crenshaw, Peter Jacobson, and Arnold Palmer standing on the practice putting green at the par 3 course, and just laughing and cutting up. And he's, legendary. He didn't play that much, but when he came out there, he was a factor. But he had his priorities in order. He loved to fish more than anything. He loved to spend time with his family, and he collected muscle cars. But he never practiced. And, of course, you've heard the legendary story about the banana and his golf bag.
Yeah, his caddy, for those that hadn't heard it, his caddy did not believe it when he said, "I take summers off." And so Litsky, as a gag, when summer started, he put a banana under the head cover of his driver. And then when the caddy went to take the head cover off, when they went back to practicing in the fall, found a rotted banana in there.
Yeah, it was 1984. It was, but no, he said he wasn't going to touch his golf clubs when the season and until the next year, and he didn't. And that was him. I mean, he just... he had so much talent he could not practice, just come out there and you know, he had 20 wins, 700 starts on tour, 7 wins on the seniors tour, last one being in 2003. But yeah, it's a great loss, and he was very tight with the boys from Texas because that's where he lived, and like I say, he loved to fish probably more than he loved to play golf, but that's okay.
And one that we haven't lost yet, but we're on the verge of, he's in palliative care, 36-year-old Jared Lyle, who after 3 different bouts in his life with a very, very aggressive form of leukemia, we were talking about this off air, Jared Lyle is cancer-free, but the chemotherapy over the years has robbed his body of being able to fend off anything. And Jared Lyle is a father of 2 young girls and a husband to a lovely wife, and that's what the yellow ribbons on everyone's caps are about this week at Firestone. And I was sad, but then I was uplifted, and I like this about the PGA Tour. We forget about what a close fraternity it really is, that all these guys know each other, even though you may not see all of them on TV. They eat together. They travel together. Their lockers are right across from one another. They all know each other's family. And I always feel good about our sport when I see the players rally around one of their own.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever said a bad word about Jared. And he's not, you know, he wasn't a superstar. And maybe people that don't keep up with golf every week had not heard of him. But I think by now he's, and I hate this part, but he's more famous for the cancer fight than he is as a golfer. But that's okay, because he started out with this disease as a teenager. And the fact that he was able to win twice on the Web.com tour and get his tour card in between 3 different fights against the disease. And of course, he's, you know, when you get leukemia, it's not like a lot of cancers where you can go in and get a month's worth of radiation and you're done. I mean, it's a long battle, but he always came back. But like you said, it's just ravaged his body to the point where, you know, I think he's decided that he just can't take any more. I know he posted something on Twitter the last time he had it, and he said it felt like the chemical or the medicine they were giving him burned his insides up. And I mean, it was very painful. So yeah, it's sad. And with, like you said, 2 small kids, and the Australian golfers, you know, he's from there. They're taking it really hard. That's a tight-knit group because they travel together. Ian Baker Finch and Adam Scott, you know, publicly said it was taking them a couple hours to even talk about it when they heard the news. They were just so tore up. So, yeah, it's a great loss for those guys and golf and fans like us.
He's the golf analyst with Fansided.com. That's Ron Mintz. I'd also like to thank Carolina amateur golfing legend and former Mid-Am champ Scott Harvey and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf information and updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now, articles about Phil Mickelson's scary dancing and Robert Allenby's tear-jerking tribute to Jared Lyle. Weather-wise, what can I say? It's August in the Carolinas, so it's hot and humid, and you may have to dodge a shower or two, but it's still perfect to get your golf on this weekend. And if you do tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.